Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Rooted Wisdom. This month, we are focusing on an important event in agriculture, the release of the USDA's Ag Census. According to the USDA, the census is a comprehensive summary of agricultural activity for the United States and for each state individually. It includes a count of the number of farms by size and type, inventory and values for crops and livestock, producer characteristics, and much more. We're going to be speaking first with Aaron Parker, the executive director of IFAI, about what the Ag Census means specifically for Indian Country.
Hi, Aaron. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello. It's good to be here.
So the first question that we kind of want to enter with is, why is the Census of Agriculture important to Indian Country?
The census has a very real impact on anybody who is involved in agriculture. They're growing, raising, harvesting food, as we know so many people across Indian Country do. It's a really important data set. Specifically, policymakers really look to these data to understand what's going on in agriculture across the country at any given moment. They look at opportunities where there might be a need for additional support, where there are areas of significant economic growth, or maybe there's some opportunity to help the market grow a little bit more. This data set really informs a lot of agricultural policy and program levels at USDA. And by program levels, I really mean funding, whether that's funding like a loan or a grant program for agriculture directly, or whether it's something that's also vital to agriculture, like technical assistance, like education and training on new opportunities that are coming out. All of those things come through USDA programs and policies, and a lot of that gets set because of what's coming up through the agriculture census. And that's just for federal policymakers. I also think these data can be a really useful starting point for tribal policymakers as well, especially right now when, you know, not only are we seeing so much tribal investment in agriculture happening from a tribal government level, but also I think there's a moment in time for tribal leaders to really get involved in helping to shape policy so that it is more supportive of tribal agriculture. Like, for example, the Bureau of Indian Affairs right now, they're redoing their agricultural leasing regulations. They haven't updated those in about 30 years or so, and it's really important that those are correctly attuned to the needs of tribal producers. And if tribal leaders are able to see in things like the Census of Agriculture how important agriculture is to their community, to its economy, you can look and see, hey, you know, we had this many producers who reported into the Ag Census. This is really important to our citizens. It's really important for us to talk to BIA as they're going through this ag leasing process so that they get this right for our producers so they can continue to thrive and support our food system and our community. So, and that's just interacting with federal policy. It's also, you know, tribal leaders investing in ag by developing things like meat processing facilities that are tribally owned, or creating tribal departments of agriculture to house their food systems or food sovereignty work. All of that can kind of be driven and shaped by what we see that are reported up in these data sets. So I think they're pretty critical.
Wow, it does seem like the Census of Ag is really important. So what are some key findings or trends in the 2022 agricultural census that specifically relate to Indian Country?
There are so many data, first of all, and it, you know, it's still pretty new, so I'm definitely not going to hit every single data point that's out there. I think we're still going through and sort of absorbing everything that we got, and that's just in one file. We haven't even gotten to the res level specific data yet. We won't get that until August. So there's more to come if you're as excited about things like that as I am. But I think there's some really good top level data that shows some growth in key sectors of Indian Country agriculture. Livestock, for example, beef cattle production continues to be a really significant economic driver for Indian Country. We saw that pretty clearly. I was really excited to see that the average age of the American Indian farmer is actually below the national average for the first time in a while. The national average is 58.1 years, and the American Indian producer and Alaska Native producer average was 57. So, and we also saw, along with that, we saw some growth in some of the 25 and under youth or younger folks categories in Indian Ag as well, which was really exciting to see too. We know there's a lot of energy and passion from Native youth who are involved in agriculture. We see that every year at our annual youth summit and at the IAC regional summits all across Indian country. So always really good to see those young people reflected in these data sets and being counted and included. So I think just off the top of my head, those were some really exciting points for me. And I know we're going to talk about the economic growth too, probably a little bit later, but that $6.1 billion in actual market value produced by Native producers was huge.
So how can the Census of Agriculture really improve its policies and data gathering ahead of the next round?
That's a really good question. So I know there are two longstanding asks of USDA here that I know that tribal producers and tribal leaders have made really consistently over the years. The first one is what the definition of a farm is. USDA has used the same definition of what a farm or ranch is for the purposes of the ag census for many years. And that is roughly that you actually earned or you had the potential to earn $1,000 from agricultural products sold in a calendar year. That's a farm. Because of that emphasis on earnings, that kicks out a lot of subsistence agriculturalists. That's something that tribal communities have pointed out for a long time, that subsistence is not something that's being done for sale. It's something that's a part of cultural tradition, it's part of dietary staples, and it's not necessarily for sale. So although that there is agriculture involved there, there's land stewardship involved there, it's not quite fitting the definition of what a farmer ranch is for the ag census. So in terms of getting sort of a complete snapshot of what's going on in indigenous agriculture, that may be missing a step. So there may be some opportunities, I think, for USDA to continue to work with producers, with us, with tribal communities, with Native organizations to maybe refine or pilot some questions. I know that that had been floated, I think, three ag censuses ago, maybe in the Pacific region, I believe, but I don't think it's ever made its way into the ag census proper. And maybe it doesn't belong there. Maybe it belongs as its own standalone alone series. But I think there's more opportunity to figure out how we get a fuller picture of what's going on in ag. The second thing here is about collection methods, how people are actually counted, how they're reached. Whether are they hearing about the ag census? Are they understanding that their data is protected and that their particular farm data is not going to be blasted out for the world to see? Are they understanding that this doesn't come with like tax consequences or reported to the IRS or anything of that nature? Like, what's going on there? I will say NAS, the National Agricultural Statistics Service at USDA, that's the agency at USDA that does the ag census, they've improved really significantly over the years in how they appropriately count Native producers, how they reach Native producers, and account for tribal agriculture. Historically, Indian country was just not counted well in the Census of Agriculture. When the ag census was part of the population census and the collection was over at Census Bureau instead of USDA, for example, there were some really strange things in the data for Indian country agriculture. Like, for example, the population census started counting agriculture in like the 1830s, 1840s. Indian ag wasn't even contemplated as part of that, I think, until like 1900 or 1910, even though there were clearly things happening, in Indian agriculture. So that's kind of a huge miss in terms of knowing what was going on then, and certainly not being a good partner to Indian country in any way at that time. But I think since USDA took over in the 90s, 97 was the first time they did an ag census, there have been some really strong advocates from Indian country who have worked with them. Ross Racine, who was one of the previous leaders of the Intertribal Agriculture Council, for example, along with Zach Ducheneau, who succeeded him over there before he went to FSA a few years ago. Both of them and a whole host of people at IAC have worked directly with NAS for years and years to improve counts. And I mean, they've made a huge number of progress, but I think even 10 years ago, we felt that Indian country data was still undercounted by about half in the census. I think that's improved because of folks like Ross and Zach and the IAC team, because of NAS. How much, I'm not entirely sure. My gut is that there's at least 25 to 30% still uncounted, and that's not even including subsistence. So I think there's still more work to do in reaching tribal producers, in hiring enumerators for the census who are maybe from tribal communities so that they're able to understand who they need to reach out to and how they need to interact with their fellow community members. Those kinds of things are really important and critical in reaching people. And I know this is a really wordy answer, but I'll throw in another one that I think is a little more recent. The Supreme Court's decision in McGirt a few years ago really changed the landscape of what tribes should be included as reservations for the purposes of the ag census. And so when we're thinking about that special subject series on American Indian reservations that's going to come out in August, I'm not really sure that that McGirt decision actually changed the way they collected data. We'll know in August for sure. But if there were tribes that were left out that should have been counted as a result of that decision, then that'll need to be addressed pretty immediately for the next census, because we don't want to leave folks out.
Absolutely. As we're starting to wrap up here, were there any parts of the data that surprised you?
Yeah, $6.1 billion in market value of products from Native producers. I mean, that was really significant. It really shocked me, because it's almost a 50% increase over that $3.5 billion that was counted in 2017. I am really immediately want to dig into that. I want to see what's driving that kind of drastic change. Because I think that there are some really good stories that are emerging overall from the census. And one of the things that I love about data is that they do tell a story. And at a brief glance, I think resilience is a certain is a story that's coming from this ag census for Indian country, with everything that had happened in the world between the last census and this. It wouldn't have surprised me if we'd seen sharp declines across the board. I mean, we had a pandemic that disproportionately affected Indigenous communities, that disrupted food systems and value chains, supply chains. So I think I opened the census file this year with maybe a little bit more trepidation than excitement than I have in the past, because I just didn't know what it was going to look like. And then to open it and see, you know, the $6.1 billion market value impact was double from what had happened in 2017, and to see a little bit of a decline in the number of producers counted, but not that much above the national average, which I think if you look at Indian country historically, understanding that due to colonization, a lot of the negative impacts to food systems are often doubled in Indian country. That wasn't the case this time, at least with the ag census numbers. So I'm really excited to see things like that. I think that there's an incredible story of resilience there. I think it speaks to the staying power of tribal producers and tribal communities, tribal governments, and their ability to weather storms together. And we do policy analysis around here. So I'm always curious to know what kind of policy change has led to things like $6.1 billion in market impact, or an increase in Native producers who are accessing broadband, which was another increase that we saw in the census. I'm a good social scientist. I'm not going to tell you that correlation is causation. I think we got to dig into things a little bit more. But I know that because of the 2018 Farm Bill, there are hundreds of thousands of pounds of food that have been procured from tribal producers by tribal governments for the food distribution program on Indian reservations, thanks to the 638 self-determination contracts that came out of the Farm Bill, thanks to things like the LFPA, the Local Food Purchasing Cooperative Assistance Program that USDA stood up in the middle of the pandemic. Those were other market opportunities for Native producers. And I think we've said for years, those of us who are working in Indian country and understand Indian country agriculture, if you open up these opportunities, Native producers will take advantage of them. Like, they want to support their communities and their families at the same time. So I think it's going to be interesting to dig into that data a little bit more over the next couple of years and figure out, like, how much of that $6.1 million is coming from those increased market opportunities that were created through policy change. Because that's a really cool story. If we can figure out how to tie those things together, if they do tie together, I suspect they do in some way, but more research needed, but that's something that really surprised me and also excites me for future research.
For sure. I mean, even though there was a decline in the number of producers, that increase in market value means that those producers are making more money, so they're able to help their communities out maybe some more and help their families out.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, I think that that's one of the things that we'd really like to dig into, right? I want to know how much of that food dollar wound up in producers' pockets, and how much of that is due to those new market opportunities, how much of that is creating economic opportunities for other people within tribal communities, because we know when folks have the ability to grow other agricultural operations, you may see more like value-added opportunities and other things that sort of come along that go with that in the supply chain. So I'm curious to know what that looks like. And I think we see it anecdotally every day working with folks across Indian country, but it's always nice to also see that reflected in numbers. So that was part of the reason this was really exciting to me.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time, Erin, and we can't wait to hear from you in one of our future podcasts.
Yeah, excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
We were also able to catch up to a producer and IFAI's food safety specialist, Megan Baldy, to help better understand what the census looks like from a producer standpoint, and how the USDA could improve their survey to get better buy-in and completion rates from producers, especially in Indian country.
Hey, Megan, how are you?
Hey, Tish, I'm good. How about you?
Good. So not everyone knows that you and your family are producers. Can you tell us about what you produce and what your farm looks like?
So we're like a small, ag farm. So we've been producing pork primarily for subsistence because I have 6 children. And so feeding their mouths is a lot. But we also have like a little small garden that we produce tons of vegetables out of and fruits and different things. And then we have some fruit trees. So just a couple different range of food production here.
Awesome. So as a producer, can you walk us through what completing the census is like?
So as a producer, completing the census is, to me, a lot of work. Not only are we doing a lot of different ag stuff and raising kids and growing a farm, but when we have to complete a 10-page survey is kind of a lot of work. After kind of getting to know it through working with USDA and NASS, I kind of got a little bit more clarity on how to successfully complete the survey, but it was a lot for sure.
So how do you think the census can improve to help improve Indian country's participation?
I think the census in itself has a lot of, it hits a lot of multi-areas where Indian country does produce different ags. We have a lot of different areas of food. Like we have people that are in cattle, we have people that are in traditional ag, and then we have people that are in traditional foods and, the management of those traditional foods. I think that that's good, but there's only like a small section of forage on the ag census. And I think that we're not able to compile a lot of that data, not only, forage, but we have fisher people out there that do salmon production, mainly tribes that I'm familiar with, especially in my community, are really subsistence based tribes and not like a commercial ag base. So a lot of the traditional foods that we gather, that we hunt, we fish, we're using that to feed our families and our communities. So like our elders. And so the ag census really doesn't capture how that food is, used within an Indian country.
Well, and they probably don't capture like ag forestry as well either, because I know that indigenous ways had a lot of ag forestry to it. And so yeah. I know that as you go back to traditional methods, that it doesn't accurately capture that information. Yeah.
And then the way that we see sometimes, food and selling food is it's on a bunch of different levels, because we have like barter systems in place. Like, if I got pork and my neighbors got eggs, we're trading. And so that's our commerce. And that's kind of been something that we've done since the beginning of time. But you can't really capture that, disseminate that information into money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what do you hope to see in the next Ag Census questionnaire?
I would like to see more of, the section that just says forage. I'd like to see it, maybe broken out into like, traditional land management. It could be fire-based. It could be like native plant restoration. It could be a lot of different things that help enhance that food system that's within the forest. I think a lot of times that's kind of separated from the Ag Census. And then talking about like that subsistence piece in there, if that could be added in there as part of like, capturing that information, because I think that subsistence and that, like, again, going back to that, how we look at capital across Indian country could be that food system still needs resources from USDA to be able to help that community with some of that funding, but they might not look at it in a way that we look at it as a, of that subsistence and that, that barter system as capital. And, but it really does feed our communities and it feeds our people the same way as if you did the traditional ag and sold it and then use that commerce.
As a member of the Hoopa tribe, I know that acorns are an important part of your traditional foods. Is there a way that the Ag Census really captures that information?
Reading over the Ag Census, it doesn't really capture that. It just says like forage foods or, you know, just like traditional land management. There's burning that needs to be done. Or like in our community, the biggest threat to our acorns is a sudden oak death. And so burning helps to mitigate that. Where we have like commercial farms that produce so much food, if that crop is lost, you know, they're able to put that information in there. Like if we have a year where we have a lost crop of acorns, we can't really put that information in the Ag Census or even like a risk management perspective, like looking at it in that way. So that subsistence language, I think, is going to be important to put into it.
Well, what advice would you give to producers for when the next Ag Census comes out? How maybe some tips to fill it out or why you think it's important?
I think, you know, even though it is long and there are some information that it's not capturing, it's still counting native ag producers in Indian country. And, you know, I know that USDA looks at that data and, you know, puts resources towards that data. And so it's important for us to do that in Indian country, to be counted so that those resources can come into our communities where it's really, you know, necessary and needed.
Well, thanks for speaking to us today, Megan.
You're welcome. Well, thanks for having me today. Appreciate it.
As we've learned today, the agricultural census holds immense significance for Indian country as it provides crucial data on the agricultural landscape within Native communities. This data is instrumental in shaping policies, securing funding, and advocating for the unique needs and challenges of Indigenous agriculture. Accurate representation in the census ensures that resources are allocated appropriately, facilitates informed decision-making, and helps preserve traditional farming practices. Moreover, it serves as a vital tool for assessing the impact of agricultural programs, promoting economic development, and advancing food sovereignty initiatives among Native peoples. In essence, the agricultural census is a cornerstone for empowering Indigenous communities and fostering sustainable growth in their agricultural endeavors. As we conclude this enlightening episode of Rooted Wisdom, we extend our gratitude to our guests Megan Baldy and Aaron Parker for their invaluable insights into Indian country and the agriculture census. Join us next time as we delve into the Model Tribal Food and Agriculture Code, exploring its significance in shaping food sovereignty and governance within Indigenous communities. Until then, keep your curiosity rooted and remember, the seeds of knowledge we sow today will yield a bountiful harvest for generations to come.